You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby G and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. And we're your hosts, Jim and Bobby Bell.
Go ahead.
You've been listening to Hot Texas with Hot Texas with the band, Swing Band, and our friend Alex Dormant, who is the leader of that band.
Well, we are so excited that you're joining us tonight, whether you're listening or watching live or you're catching the podcast of the show. We really thank you for riding along with us again tonight. And this new segment, we have a new segment.
We do. Limelight. Where'd that come from?
In the Limelight is a new segment that will be part of just about every show. It carves out the first 12 minutes or so for a special guest that joins us. And we're using that spot to allow that guest to highlight something new. Maybe they're a returning guest. They have a new book. They have been nominated for some awards. They're going on a book tour. It's kind of their elevator pitch. You know, it gives them quite a bit of time to talk about what's going on.
Or maybe an expert in the film industry.
Tonight, we are joined, and they are already up on screen. Welcome, gentlemen. Henry C. Park, who is actually in the limelight with us every month, the first Thursday of the month. Hello, Henry.
Hello, Bobby Jean. Hello, Jim.
Delighted to have you back. I think you're not in New York City. You're not in New York this week, right?
No, I just got back into L.A. late Tuesday night.
Yes.
And, so be here for a while.
Wonderful. And then also joining us, and he is going to be in the spotlight, is author Bill Markley. And go ahead and wave or say hello, Bill.
Hello, howdy.
So, Bill, where are you joining us from tonight?
Yeah. Well, I live in Pierre, South Dakota, and that's how you say it. It's spelled like Pierre, but we say Pierre. Like, take a long walk off a short pier.
There you go.
And is it the capital? Bill, is it the capital?
It is. It's the capital of our state. And if you've never been here, it's a beautiful area to visit right on the Missouri River, and we have all kinds of outdoor activities here. So, great place to live.
Before we officially put Henry in the limelight, I think you two have some things in common. Do you want to chat a little bit about, what do you think, film maybe?
Sure.
Yeah. Go ahead, Henry.
Yeah, it's as a matter of fact, I was delighted to find out that I'd be on the show with Bill because he's in my book, The Wrong Finger, The Greatest Westerns Ever Made, and the people who made them. Because back when I was doing an article about the 25th anniversary of Dances with Wolves, I spoke to Bill because he's in it. He was a reenactor who got involved in... Well, why don't you tell us what you did in there, Bill?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, I had friends that were in a Civil War reenacting group, the First Nebraska. They are now. And I was invited along. And most of the filming, the Civil War films and the Fort Sedgwick film where Costner was by himself, Dunbar was by himself in that little fort by himself. Those were all filmed around Pierre. The Civil War scenes were about 30 miles east along the Missouri River. And so it was great. I was in the Civil War scenes, the opening scene where they're going to cut Dunbar's foot off. In fact, I'm in the background there playing chess with another guy. So if you see two people playing chess, I'm on the left hand side of the table. So yeah, like remember the book Where's Waldo? I popped up in the film about seven different times, just different little spots here and there. Then I'm playing Confederate, shooting at Costner. We shot at him for about 5 days without ever hitting him. And and then I was in the Fort Hays scene where Dunbar gets his orders to go further west. And I had a great scene with Timmons, Robert Pastorelli, where we're going back and forth about how to load the wagon up. I'm all set, ready for to see myself on the big silver screen, and they cut all that out. So you never know what's going to happen. And then finally, I was in the scene where the cavalry is looking for the Lakota village, and it filmed in the Black Hills and Spearfish Canyon. So at the end of the day, I would write down everything that happened because I'd never done anything like this before. Cleaned it up a little bit, and I published it as a book called Dakota Epic. Self-published it. So that was my start in writing, was to put out there my journal that I kept during the film.
Well, in the pages that we reviewed, went back and read, you also talk about a friend that we all have in common and an author that was on the show not long ago, Michael Blake. Anything you'd like to share about Michael?
Well, yeah. He was, I mean, I just, you know, met him, you know, once. I mean, and you're talking about the Michael Blake that wrote the story that the movie was based on.
I think we're talking about two different
Michael Blake. I think we are talking about two different Michael Blake.
Michael Blake you're talking about. No, I know him. No, I'm talking about Michael Blake, the author.
The author.
Right.
Okay, the other Michael Blake was on there. I didn't meet him at the time. So if he was on Dances with Wolves, I did not meet him.
Yeah, Michael Blake, the author. Yes.
Right.
And that sounds like that was really wonderful that you got to, that he was part of what was going on.
Right, and he, the guy, Michael Blake, who wrote the story that Dances with Wolves was based on, was a personal friend of Kevin Costner's.
Yeah.
And at the time when he wrote the story, I guess he was divorced. And he was kind of living at the Costner house off and on, you know, taking showers there and that sort of thing. So it was kind of fun to talk to him about those things, how the movie came about. So.
Yeah, I remember him hearing him speak. I don't know, Henry, if you do, at the Autry. It was part of a sort of opening when we did the exhibition on Custer. Right. And Michael came and spoke, and I just met him very, you know, just a handshake kind of thing. Did not know him, but he was a fabulous speaker, and it was a wonderful presentation. So, we have Michael Blake's in.
Yeah, Michael Blake, he even lived in his car.
I think that's absolutely right.
You have to give him credit. He worked real hard there. Once it, and then became.
Well, you know what they tell, you know what they say to authors? Don't they say, keep your day job? Yes, no?
Exactly. Gentlemen,
what do you think?
Good advice.
Well, Henry, we're going to go ahead and put you in the spotlight. And of course, Bill stays right on screen with us. But Henry, take it away. It's all yours.
Thank you. This
is the film editor for True West Magazine. Special guest in the spotlight. Yeah. Good friend.
Right.
Lucy Park. Take it away.
Thank you. Well, of course, the big news of the last several days was the death of Kris Kristofferson. And what a talented songwriter and singer and actor he was. I had just finished writing a piece for True West about the 50th anniversary of Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, where he's Billy to James Coburn's Pat. And he was so good. And it was his first lead in a film, and he had no acting training whatsoever. Peckinpah used him again in Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia and as the lead in Convoy. Sam Peckinpah's assistant, Katie Haber, told me what a joy he was to work with. And Charles Martin Smith, who was the youngest actor in Pat Garrett and the first killed, told me how welcoming Chris was when other actors were kind of self-involved dealing with the onset Peckinpah melodrama. Years later, Charles got to direct Chris in Dolphin Tale 1 and 2. And, Chris loved Westerns, and he did big ones like Heaven's Gate, which, of course, bankrupted United Artists. But it's very good. He did TV ones like the Almost Musical Stagecoach, small indies like John Sayles' remarkable Lone Star.
Yeah.
And tiny budget ones like Hickok with Luke Hemsworth, Trace Adkins, and Bruce Dern, where he generously took time to give me an interview after a very long day and night of filming. Matter of fact, that interview's probably going to be in True West pretty soon. I was just watching a 2009 Western of his, The Last Rites of Ransom Pride, and I was surprised to see Peter Dinklage in it. I had assumed that The Thicket was Dinklage's first Western. Has anybody seen that yet?
No.
Because I was amazed at how good it is. Now, I know a Western with a dwarf bounty hunter hero and a lesbian outlaw villain sounded way too gimmicky to me, but it's excellent. One of the best Westerns of the year by far.
Wow.
Now, for anybody who's going to be in Southern California this Sunday, October 6th, the Gene Autry Museum is having their 36th anniversary celebration, their annual block party. They're going to have a mechanical bull, trick ropers, singers, dancers, horses, a Ferris wheel, mini train rides, art, jewelry, Gene Autry screenings, and what families want most to see, me, Henry Park, signing my new book, The Greatest Westerns Ever Made and the People Who Made It. That's
fun. Very good.
Hey. And 1 week from today, on Thursday, October 10th, in Lone Pine, California, near Bishop, the 34th annual Lone Pine Film Festival begins and runs through Sunday. You may not know the name Lone Pine, but if you're a Western fan, you'll know it on sight. The unique rock formation in the the Alabama Hills have been locations on over 500 movies, mostly Westerns, but also great crime dramas like High Sierra and a number of Indian adventures like Gunga Din. And it's the only film festival where you can watch a movie, then hop in your car and drive to the place where it was shot. This year's theme actually is a quote from the great silent Western star William S. Hart, who in 1939 was waxing rhapsodic about the joys of making Western films, ending with, "Oh, the thrill of it all." And that's the theme for the event.
That's a great theme.
Yeah. Now, among the guests who will be attending and speaking are Roy Rogers and Dale Evans' adopted daughter, Cheryl Rogers Barnett, movie and TV stars Bruce Boxleitner, Robert Carradine, Patrick Wayne, from Daniel Boone, Darby Hinton, from Blazing Saddles, Burton Gilliam, Errol Flynn's daughter, Rory Flynn, stuntman and son of Richard Farnsworth, Diamond Farnsworth, Joel McRae and Francis D's grandson, Wyatt McRae, son of Western director William Whitney, J.D. Whitney, father and daughter movie prop wizards, Dennis Parrish and Hope Parrish, film historians and authors galore, C. Courtney Joyner, Michael Blake, you know which one, Ella K. Rohde, Mark Wanamaker, Rob Word, and I'm so excited. One of my favorite early Western stars was Tom Tyler, who starred in lots of silent Westerns and lots of 1930s Westerns, but everyone knows him from Stagecoach as Luke Plummer, the man who was has a great showdown with John Wayne at the end. And he's a good hero, a great villain, the original Captain Marvel, and I'll be interviewing his niece, Sandra Slepsky, about his later years. Then watching his movie, Rip, Roar, and Buckaroo, which was shot right in Lone Pine, then driving out to the locations where it was filmed. So if you'd like to join us, go to lonepinefilmfestival.org for all the details. And you can learn all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thank you, Henry.
We have a question, Henry.
Bill
Spangleberger. Did you know him?
Bill.
Oh, yes. You know,
him too.
He was such a good guy. I did not know him that well because most of my 9 years of dealing with True West has been through phone calls and emails. So we talked a few times. I met him briefly a few times. But I'll tell you what a nice guy he was. Mm-hmm. I had written something about Iron Eyes Cody that I'd gotten a book my daughter had given me of his book on how to do sign language. Mm-hmm. And I just had said something about meeting him briefly, but, you know, I wish I'd gotten his autograph. And right after that, oh God, I'm just blacking out. The gentleman we're discussing.
Oh, Phil Spangberger.
Thank you, Phil. Spangberger is such a tough name.
Yeah.
But he called me up and he said, "Hey, Henry, I've got an extra ironized Cody autograph. Would you like it?"
Oh,
I mean, that's so nice.
Oh,
what a good guy. We knew
who he was, and
we met him through SAS. You know?
Yeah, we met him through the Single Action Shooting Society, and the very first event that we went to that was a SAS event. He was riding his gorgeous white horse, Nevada. We didn't know who he was. We knew nothing about anything. Yeah. We were just like kids with our mouths wide open the whole time. And he was kind of doing what was at that time a new event. He was riding and shooting at balloons. It was a, now it has a name, and now I'm blanking on it. It's a mounted shooting. And the whole event was so new to us. We just didn't know anything. And he was so kind. People were coming up and talking to him afterwards. And he was giving tips on how to, you know, prepare your horse for this kind of thing. And then we would see him. He would come into the Autry fairly often, and he would ride at the Rose Parade where there was a group of, they had a specific name. And they were all, I think, kind of Western reenactors and did stunt work. And what, and they were the Sons of the Native West or something. That Sons, and I don't remember the name. And he was always he was always out in front. And there's Nevada and there's Phil. And so I guess we kind of felt like we knew him, but we really didn't. But he's a loss. It's a loss to those of us that love Western culture and film and lifestyle. It's a loss. So so we have just wrapped up with Henry in the limelight, but Henry, don't go away.
No.
And we're shifting the light now on to spotlight guest Bill Markley.
We're going to talk about Wild Bill Hickok and Buffalo Bill Cody and Plainsmen of the Legendary West. This is a great book with a long title.
What a great book. Do you have a little something you're going to introduce Bill with? Okay.
First, we have a bio. History, especially American history and travel, have fascinated Bill since he was a boy growing up on the family farm in Pennsylvania. Moving to Pierre, South Dakota in 1976 to work for the State Department of the Environment and Natural Resources was a natural fit for Bill. He immersed himself in local history and participated in Civil War and Western Frontier reenacting. He's been seen in such movies as Dancing with Wolves, as we've been talking about, Son of Morning Star, Far and Away, Gettysburg, and Crazy Horse. He worked in Antarctica, traveled to the South Pacific, kayaked and backpacked in Alaska, and chaperoned a Boy Scout troop to Japan. He has camped, hiked, and rode horseback throughout the West. Bill and his wife Liz live in Pierre, South Dakota, where they raised two children. All right. Now, we do have a quote. I have an opening quote here from the book. Oh. And this is about Buffalo Bill. One of our characters in here, Majors, gave Billy a Bible and had him sign the oath, which all of the firm's employees signed. And it is, "We, the undersigned wagon masters, assistants, teamsters, and all other employees of the film, Russell, Majors, and Waddell, do hereby sign that we will not swear, drink whiskey, play cards, or be cruel to dumb beasts in any way, shape, or form."
What a great oath to take.
Right, maybe we all should take that oath.
Well, and Gene Autry's 10. Yeah. Welcome, Bill. Welcome, Bill. We're delighted to have you join us.
We are.
And this was, Jim was saying, this is a great book.
Well, so thanks for having me on. So.
Yeah. So do you want to tell us a little something about yourself that maybe we didn't have in the bio?
Well, I think it affects all my writing. I wasn't trained as a professional writer. I was trained as a scientist and an engineer. And using the scientific method in, you know, going after various topics and research and that sort of thing. So in all my research, I'm always looking for just the facts. You know, as Joe Friday said, all we want is the facts, ma'am. You know, so that's been my attitude with things. And when you look at Old West stories, there's so much what I'll say is incrustation around what the actual truth might be out there. It's kind of fun to get in there and try to dig and find out what was the real truth. And it's always elusive. I mean, even today you can, you know, if you watch television news, you can, you know, Fox News is totally different from CNN, which is totally different from others. So, and it was the same way back then. Different newspapers had different spins on things. And, you know, if you didn't like somebody, you weren't going to write anything nice about that person that you didn't like. So it's interesting to go in there and try to ferret out what was actually might be the truth, because the truth is fluid in the past.
You know, you must have just had be working on research 24/7, you know, consider your other books and this one right here.
Well, yeah,
this is not a novella, you know. This is a real masterwork.
Yes, my wife will tell you how much time I spent in the basement here. Work, you know, she said, "Do you know which day you take the trash out?" I'm going, "Oh, I forgot, but I know what happened on a particular date back in 1872, but I can't remember to take the trash out." So it's a family joke.
You talk about the basement. You talked about before when I'm talking to you. I'm thinking of a little dingy, cold, damn place.
Like
do you have it fixed up down there, or is it really a nasty place to work?
Well, this is it right here.
There you go.
That looks like that's a good functioning spot.
It's good.
You know, Bill, I'm curious, although you live in South Dakota and we've learned about all of the outdoor things that you do, but what got you inspired by the West that has the historical West that is just not taken over, but, you know, it just inspires everything that you do. What was the first little spark where you said, "I got to write about that"?
Oh, that I have to write about it. I don't know.
Or the research.
Yeah, I don't know that. It just kind of evolved, I guess. I mean, even though I grew up in Pennsylvania, my dad always loved the West. He worked on a ranch in Colorado for a while when he was a kid, and we raised quarter horses on our farm. And my dad always dressed Western, even when he went down to the Jersey Shore. He was wearing a Stetson on his head, and of course, he stood out for sure down there, jeans and a Stetson. But I don't know. I've always loved history, and I've always dabbled in writing, kept a journal. And when I got on Dances with Wolves, then my journaling just emerged onto, you know, my time on set there. And so then I published that book. And then after that, I started doing some more. True West Magazine really gave me a start in writing for, you know, magazines. And then I wrote for Wild West Magazine and South Dakota Magazine and a few others. So it just doesn't happen. It takes a long time to get into the writing field. And, you know, I tell anybody I talk to, encourage them to keep on writing. You may not get the world's famous novel right off the bat, but, you know, start writing for local newspapers or magazines, that sort of thing, and slowly build up your resume that way.
Mm-hmm. I would say, as readers and having a little armchair historian background, both of us a little bit, definitely not any kind of thorough understanding of anything, but a real interest ourselves, reading this book, and it is very, very thorough, and we're going to get in depth about it in just a few moments, but Wild Bill Hickok and Buffalo Bill Cody, two names that everybody, when you say them, they're going to have some kind of perception, right? From wherever it comes. And your research is so very interesting that I felt like I'm meeting them for a first time in many ways. And I think that's kind of a challenge for a writer to meet a reader that maybe already thinks they know things.
They knew everything.
and re-engage us and give us facts and information, but Bill, in such an engaging way that we don't feel like, oh, this is just more, you know, facts. These are stories. These are everything that you write about is so compelling and interesting, and it gave us just a whole nother sort of refreshed look at both of these at both of these.
Well, I have to say, I read some things that I didn't really know about before.
Like, really?
I read a lot about Wild Bill, but this is some different things here. And your take on Deadwood and Jack McCall, there was a whole different little look at that guy and what happened there. So I thought it's very interesting. You folks, you got to read this book so you can hear about Deadwood.
So we're going to take a greater in-depth look at the book. We're going to take a very short break. And when we come back, Bill Markley is actually going to read a little something for us from Wild Bill Hickok and Buffalo Bill Cody, Plainsmen of the Legendary West. But first, here's a word from one of the places you can find Bill's books, including this one and including Henry's, as well as all of the guests that we have on Rendezvous with a Writer. This is the Out West Shop Bookshop affiliate page on bookshop.org. Don't go away. Bill's going to read when we come back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking with Henry Park and Bill Markley. And particularly, we're talking about our book here, The Plainsman, with Buffalo Bill and Wild Bill Hickok. You know, I think Bill's going to read a little bit here, right?
Oh, Bill, you have a passage?
Yes, but before I read, I just want to show something. Some people are probably not familiar with the Will Rogers Medallion Award. It's given out every year in a variety of categories. Histories, fiction, you name it. There's a bunch of categories, but this book won this gold medal biography. So I was pretty excited about that, and I thought, well, I'm going to show it off. So
I think you should.
You did. Congratulations. Just
like gathering dust in the basement here. So I thought I'd just read one little paragraph real quick, and kind of. It's in the introduction. I think it gives a flavor for the book. Mention of their names can be confusing because there are many Wild Bills and Buffalo Bills. It was even hard for the newspapers to keep them all straight. The March 1st, 1870 edition of the Leavenworth Times reported, quote, George A. Parker of Fort McPherson informs us that it was Joe Lane and not Buffalo Bill who was recently killed. William is alive and kicking and very expert in hunting antelope and buffalo. We believe there is now a Buffalo Bill or a Wild Bill in every county, in every western state and territory. It is therefore easy to kill him and easy for William to still live. So I thought it was kind of fun that even back in the day, there were Wild Bills and Buffalo Bills and people were getting them confused. And that happens today. And hopefully if somebody reads my book, they'll figure out who Wild Bill is and how he's different from Buffalo Bill.
You know, kind of like backing up a little second. I was talking to Bobby yesterday, and we were thinking, you know, there must be all sorts of Bill's fan clubs out there. And I thought, you know, reaching out to one of these guys, let them know the show's going on. We got somebody who really knows what's going on here about the two Bills. And I looked at it. I did find one fan page, you know, and you had already posted on it.
Thank you, Bill.
Just trying to get the word out there about your show and my book.
Actually, there's three Bills in tonight's story. Well, what caused you to decide to write about both of these gentlemen in this book? What got you going?
I've always been interested in both of them. I mean, they're both really fabulous characters. I mean, they were well known during their lifetime, and not just today. Well, actually, they're probably more well known back then than they are today. I think as time goes on, people are starting to, you know, their knowledge of history is becoming more fuzzy as time goes on. And maybe they're not learning as much as, you know, we have in the past on these things, or maybe we were closer, when we were younger to the time period when these things happened. But I really wanted to bring these two characters alive today and let people see, you know, through my writing, what they were really like. I mean, they were humans. You know, today I think we look at them as characters. Mm-hmm. You know, people can have them stand for, you know, one side of a topic or another. But I mean, they're real life people. They were complicated. They were funny. They enjoyed life. They loved to tell tall tales and pull somebody's leg. I think today a lot of people think of Wild Bill is kind of a cold-blooded killer, but he wasn't. He liked to tell jokes. He liked to pull people's legs and to kind of tell a little bit how the guy was when he was in Hays City and when he was in Abilene. The kids in town would just follow him around through the street. You know, just imagine, you know, Hickok walking down the street with a mob of little kids following him behind, and he was kind-hearted to him. And, you know, so I wanted to try to bring the human side out for people of both these guys. They were warm-hearted. They loved people. They would do anything for anybody. If there was an emergency, they had the firefighter mentality. They would rush in where other people were rushing away. They would help people out. So I want people to know that.
And they met. And they knew each other. How did they meet?
Right. They met. It's kind of funny. There's about almost a nine-year difference between the two of them. Yeah. You know, just real quick, Buffalo Bill, before he was Buffalo Bill, he was just, as a kid, he was known as Billy and then Willie, Cody, Will Cody. He went, call me Will, not Willie. And so his dad died early on. And so he had to take care of the family, his mom and his siblings. And he had various jobs, but he got a job on a bull train. And bull trains were, you know, have like six oxen pulling a wagon along the Oregon Trail. So he had a job on that. And Wild Bill Hickok, it wasn't Wild Bill at the time, it was just James Hickok, was a teamster on that wagon train. And one day around the campfire, a bully started picking on Will Cody and Wild Bill, James Hickok, stood up and said, don't you be picking on little Will there anymore, or you'll have me to deal with, and stood between Cody and the bully. And ever since then, they were good friends all the way through life.
Mm-hmm. And they both were anti-slavery.
Yes. I can talk about that a little bit. The Hickok family in Illinois there, they were abolitionists, and they were part of the Underground Railroad. And they in their house, they had a cellar, but then they also had a second secret cellar in there. And that's where they would hide the escaped slaves until they could move them along through the Underground Railroad. And hundreds of people passed through the Hickok farmhouse. In fact, there's one story that that Hickok's brother, Lorenzo, told when they were kids. Their dad was taking some escaped slaves in a wagon, and they were along in the wagon, and some people coming along that were, out to capture escaped slaves were coming after them. And his dad pushed the two boys down below in the back with, you know, the other people that were in there, and was able to outrace who was coming after him and hide on a side road. And they passed by. And so that was kind of an exciting time right then for a kid. And from that point on, he was always strong abolitionist. He was, fought for the Union as a scout and a spy. The same with Cody, Will Cody. His dad, 1854, this is in Kansas, went to a small neighborhood store there, and there was a mob of people there, and they asked him, "What's your stance on slavery?" And he stood up and he said, "This Kansas should be we're free soilers. This should be a free soil state and not slavery here." And one of the men rushed up and stabbed him in the chest. It punctured his lung. He almost died. And years later, he did die from complications from that wound. Mm-hmm. But they were constantly harassed by their pro-slavery neighbors. One time, Billy was upstairs with his dad's pistol, and his sister was there with a knife in case this abolitionist was down in the kitchen. Well, you got to read the book.
And those are the kinds of stories that I just...
There's one after another in this book.
I missed it in all of the other reading that I did about...
But both of them grew up and they remained strong abolitionists. And it showed throughout their lives, even after the Civil War, they were always stood up for minorities and that sort of thing. And when I say that, of course, they did have to, fight against, some of the Native Americans, the tribes and that sort of thing. But after, when the fighting was done, they could be friends. And especially Cody later on when he had his Wild West. Mm-hmm. Don't call it a show. It was an exhibition. And some people add show in the end, but he hated that word show. Mm-hmm. So it was just his Wild West. He treated the Indians fairly, gave them a good salary. The same with women. He paid them at a time when people didn't do that.
We're going to step away again, gentlemen, for just a moment. We are delighted to welcome Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, both sponsors of Rendezvous with a Writer. And if you are a writer, find out what they can do for you. And we're going to be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency. Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking with Henry Park and Bill Markley, and particularly Bill, about his plainsman of the legendary West. Say, Henry, did you want to ask him a question?
I would love to. I was curious. So many movies and TV shows have featured Buffalo Bill Cody and Wild Bill Hickok. And I was wondering if you had any favorite portrayals, or if not necessarily favorite, which you thought were the most accurate.
Okay, I'll be totally honest. I don't think any of them are accurate.
That's okay.
Sorry.
Did you enjoy any of them?
The only one I kind of liked was Buffalo Bill's portrayal in Hidalgo. I thought that was pretty good. But I don't know. I think they need to make a... No, none of them, from what I can tell, was good. Although I will say that... Buffalo Bill, he did dabble with the film industry early on. I mean, he did make two movies. He was fascinated by it. But I really think somebody really needs to do these two men justice and make good, accurate movies about them. I'm sorry. I'm one of these guys that if I see something wrong, like the wrong time period, clothing or weapon in a film, it kind of bugs me. And I start mumbling in the movie theater, and my wife Jack, with her elbow, says, "It's only a movie,
Are you going to tell me that no little kid on crutches got up and yelled, "God bless you too, Buffalo Bill"? It's not a documentary.
I am looking a little bit at time. There's so much fabulous things to talk about. One of the stories, of course, is Buffalo Bill and the Pony Express. Do you want to just maybe chat a little bit about, that's just something we all sort of know in our minds. Was it true, not true? Tell us about that.
Right. Well, again, at that time, the Pony Express, it only lasted for about a year. But Buffalo Bill, just going, Will Cody's dad had already died. He was taking care of his family, you know, his mom and his siblings. The owners of the Pony Express that had the freighting companies, they knew of his situation. He was a lot younger than what the actual Pony Express rider was supposed to be, like 17 or 18. I think he was like 14 at the time. I think they gave him a break. I think they said, you know, we know that, and they knew him. They knew this kid could ride. And so they said, okay, we'll let him ride. But I think he was probably as like maybe a replacement rider. Maybe if one of the riders couldn't make it at that time, that he would pitch in and do the riding for us, for them. So I think he did ride, but maybe not to the extent, and maybe didn't have some of the things that he talked about happen. They're not written down by any, you know, these incidents are not written down by any other people, but he did. And just to say that there are several Buffalo Bill autobiographies out there. And most historians believe that the earliest one that he wrote is the most accurate. And then as time went on, they became more and more embellished. Mm-hmm. So if you want to read his autobiography, which I think is really good, it's really interesting, try to get the first earliest version. So I do believe he rode for the Pony Express, but maybe not to the extent that he claimed he did. He liked to embellish. Yeah.
One quick question here about Calamity Jane and Wild Bill. Truth or fiction?
Fiction. There was absolutely no romance between Wild Bill and Calamity Jane. They first met at, how much time do I have?
How about like a minute and a half on this one?
Okay, get your stopwatch up. They first met at Fort Laramie, where she had been thrown in the fort's jail there for drunken, disorderly conduct. And the officer of the day asked Wild Bill and his partners who were there with him, please take this woman off my hands. And so they agreed to it. One of the guys, Steve Utter, knew her from before. So she was almost completely naked. So they clothed her. They took her along with them on their way to Deadwood. Steve Utter and Calamity Jane, they were together. They had a thing going on. And Wild Bill was married at the time. He married Agnes Lake, who they'd had a long-standing on and off again romance over the years. So they finally got married March 1876, and he was madly in love with her. If you read his letters back to Agnes and hers to him, they were in love. And what was going on was he was going to go to Deadwood to earn money there, and enough that they could go buy a ranch and raise horses. And she was going to come out later in October to be with him at that time. But of course, we all know he was killed in August.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there wasn't anything. He was nice to her. He was kind to her. They were friends. He grub-staked her when they got to Deadwood. He gave her money to go buy women's clothing, because she was dressed in buckskin and pants at the time. And when he gave her the money, he said, okay, but make sure that you take a bath and wash behind the ears. So,
love that.
And he paid him the other guys back afterwards.
So anyway. Wild Jane, right? Yeah.
Bill?
Put that in a movie and wash behind the ears. But after he was killed then, I mean, she did mourn for him. And as time went on, Calamity Jane, she implied that there might be something there. But, you know, she was just trying to make a buck. I mean, there was no social safety net for people at the time, and she would, you know, do it just about anything to earn a living. And and then of course there was what it was debunked. There was I think the woman's name was Jane Hickok, and she came out with Calamity Jane's diary and letters from Calamity Jane, and she claimed that she was Wild Bill and Calamity Jane's love child. And it was all debunked. Number one, Calamity Jane could not write at all, so she had to keep a diary. And if they found out then that it was actually this Jane Hickok's handwriting, all the letters and diary.
You've been talking with our special guest who's been in the spotlight, Bill Markley, and we've been talking about Wild Bill Hickok and Buffalo Bill Cody, plainsmen of the legendary West. And it is just filled with fascinating stories like this. You will feel like you do not know these gentlemen until you read this book. Bill, what are you working on next?
Well, I just, when was it? Monday. I turned in a biography of Jim Bridger, the mountain man. And that was probably, it took me over 2 years to do that, to research that and dig into it and write it. So hopefully I'll be able to bring him alive to modern day readers. He was actually, I think he was probably one of the greatest frontiersmen of all time. But, you know, again, he didn't know how to write. In fact, he couldn't even sign his own name. He'd write with an X. So, I got other things in the future, but we'll see what happens.
And you're going to be back January 9th of 2025, and you're going to be back with Kellen Cutsforth. And the two of you have worked on these two books. And right. So when you come back with us, I think you'll be sort of dialoguing with each other about they're subtitled Another Battle Over the Truth in the Mythic Wild West.
Right. So the premise of those books is each book, 10 different chapters, 10 different stories. Kellen tells one side of the story. I tell the other side. And we give our sources so the reader can make up their own mind. Yeah. For instance, he tells the Earp side of the OK Corral, and I tell the Clint McLowry side. Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. Did they die in Bolivia, or was that two other hombres? And those two guys took off. And in fact, you know, for years, the Pinkertons were still out looking for those guys after that Bolivian incident. So,
yeah. Bill, where can people find you and follow you?
I'm trying to stay hidden away in my basement. No. my website is real easy, billmarkley.com. Or you can find my books on, you know, any of the internet bookstores, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or you can order them through your local bookstore. I like to say that, you know, go support your local bookstore down the street and order the books through them.
Henry, where can people find you?
Oh, well, they can find me at my blog, Henry's Western Roundup. They can find me in True West every issue. I also very frequently blog for the INSP channel. And, of course, you can get my book, The Greatest Westerns Ever Made and the People Who Made Them, from Jim and Bobby Jean at their place out west.
Jim, you have a quote.
We have a couple of quotes here. This is from the both of these quotes are from the book. And this one is regarding from a lady named Sarah, who is a real character in the story. In later years, Sarah told a fellow by Jesse Williams, Hickok has steel blue eyes that were beautiful and gentle, but could change in a second and look dangerous. You had better watch his eyes. He wasn't one to run from a fight. I came close to having an affair with Bill Hickok. And Bill Buffalo Bill himself had given a quote about Bill Hickok. Well, Bill Hickok was a pretty good shot, but he could not shoot as quick as half a dozen men we all knew in those days, nor as straight either. But Bill was cool, and the men he went up against were rattled, I guess. Bill beat them to it. He made up his mind to kill the other man before the other man had even finished thinking.
Thank you, gentlemen, so much for being with us tonight. Next week in the limelight will be cozy mystery writer Laura Hearn. She has 5 fabulous stories out and some other books as well, and she will be in that limelight. And in the spotlight, I'm very interested, can't wait to start reading this, Stories Told Through Sound, The Craft of Writing Auto Dramas for Podcasts, Streaming, and Radio. Our special guest will be Barry M. Putt Jr. And we know writers listening out there, there's all kinds of ways to think about what you could be writing to help you extend what you write about. And podcasts is a great idea. So join us next week. So do you have a parting comment?
It's always a great day out west. Thanks, fellas.
Keep writing and we'll keep reading. We'll see you down the trail.
Thank you.
Thank you.